Hey everyone, it's your host Richie Burke and welcome back to the Go Getters podcast brought to you by Go Get It Marketing and Media, ggmm.io, and our good friends over at On Milwaukee. Got a special episode for you today. My dad, John Burke, JB, is on the show for the second time. The first time he came on back in October and discussed his book, The Presidential Playbook, leading up to the election. And this time he is going to talk about Trek Bicycle. There's a lot we covered. We talked about the early days of Trek. My grandpa founded it back in 76. My dad joined the company in the 80s. So we talked about the early days and what it was like getting that business off the ground and turning it into the global company that it is today. He touched on what it's like running that business during the pandemic, what the future of the company looks like, some of their major goals, how they've really turned Trek into a hospitality company and not just a cycling company, and how they've been able to create an amazing culture and recruit top talent in the world to Waterloo, Wisconsin. And we also got to touch on my grandfather, his dad, Richard Burke, Dick Burke, the big guy who actually did a lot for the city of Milwaukee behind the scenes. He founded Trek in 1976. Just a amazing guy that left us too soon. He passed away back in 2008. So we got to touch on that. It was a pretty special episode. And again, this was live from Milwaukee Rotary. The audio quality, it's not studio quality, but it should be good enough. Hopefully Gabe, our audio engineer, did some magic to it, so it's good enough for you guys. But overall, good episode, fun episode, having my dad on the show. Before we dive in, I did want to say thank you. So the Go Getters podcast is up for two awards. It actually won two awards from the Milwaukee Press Club Excellence in Journalism Awards, which are judged by other press club judges from all over the country. And we were a winner for the best podcast and best long hard feature story. Not quite the winner yet. We were one of the top three, so we'll be getting gold, silver, or bronze. That's announced in May. Hopefully gold, but we'll see. We're up against some good competition. But regardless, very thankful for all the support from you guys and the Milwaukee Press Club. It was cool to be recognized from the Milwaukee Press Club. I feel lucky to have this platform. So thanks again. So before we get started, just a couple fun facts. My dad is the president of Trek Bicycle. He's been the president since 1997. He's a great father figure. I'll give him that. He is also a two-time Ironman finisher. You may not know that by looking at him, but he's a two-time Ironman finisher, just like our man Chris Stegman, although my dad does not have the Ironman tattoo like Chris Stegman. It is hard to match the swagger on that guy. My dad is also a RFK 2019 golf scramble champion. I may have had a role in that. And he was an amazing middle school basketball coach. Got to give him that. He coached us in the parochial school league. I believe we won a B flight championship. And I think he only had two career technical fouls. I don't know if I saw any other coach in the parochial middle school league get a technical foul, but my dad only kept it to two in 4 years. So not bad. So just you combine all that, just an all-around great guy, very accomplished man who I am lucky to have as my father. Now let's dive in.
All right, JB, let's get started. So for those who don't know, can you give a high-level overview of the history of Trek and how you got involved in the business?
Well, Richie, thanks for having me. And Amelia, thanks for the great introduction. It's great to see you. And congratulations on becoming a Rotarian. You will be an amazing member. Trek started in 1976. My father owned a business in Milwaukee. He was in the appliance distribution business. And he ran into a guy who wanted to start a bike company, Bevel Hog. And so my father was the money behind it, and Bevel was the bike guy. And they located in Waterloo, which was in between Madison and Milwaukee. And that's how Trek started in 1976. I think they made something about 570 bikes in the first year, and they grew the business from there. And I ended up joining the company in 1984 when it had reached its peak. The business was doing quite well, and I started in May of 1984. And at that time, the business crashed, just kind of went down, customer service issues, quality issues, et cetera. And I spent a bunch of time out in the field watching that happen. And it was a great education for me. And that's how I got involved in the business. And it's the only job I've ever had.
And what's it been like going through the pandemic the last year? And what are the focuses right now?
Yeah, it's been the I've been at Trek for 37 years, and it's been the craziest year ever, times 10. And you know, I just remember being in my office on March 12th and watching the U.S. shut down, watching Europe shut down, and you know, putting the team together. And we were thinking this was going to be the worst year in Trek's history. And you know, we had a great meeting, got everybody together, figured out what our priorities needed to be, and we listed out six priorities. We did some financial modeling for Trek's worst year and what all the ramifications of that were going to be. You know, we communicated. One of the six things we said we were going to do is we were going to communicate. And, you know, I did a video update with the Trek team once a week, let everybody know what was going on. And we put a lot of plays into place to make sure that Trek was going to do just fine. And, you know, I told our people at the time from that first video on March 12th, I said, when it was apparent what an impact the pandemic would have, I told them, I said, this will be our finest hour. I go, we will do our best work here. And it looked like it was going to be brutal. And then about the end of March, somebody walked into my office and they said, you know, I was on the phone with the dealer in Florida, and he had a line outside his door. I'm like, no. And that was the start of it. And then there was a weekend about April 12th, and the lines were out the door in Florida. They were out the door in Milwaukee. They were out the door everywhere. And the bike boom started. We have an official start date. It was April 12th. And Europe was still locked down, but Europe came back in May. And the bike boom was in full swing. And by the end of May, we have large distribution centers in the United States, and by the end of May, they were empty. What we thought on March 12th was going to be an absolute disaster, by the end of May, it was clearly going to be the biggest year in Trek history. And so since then, we've gone from you know, focusing on our business to our number one priority just being our supply chain, is making sure that we build enough product, that we get enough product, and it's been an absolute challenge. So that's the pandemic.
And JB, obviously you guys have been one of the industries that have benefited from COVID. You mentioned supply chain. What are some of the other issues that it's brought about? And as a global company with a lot of people headquartered in Waterloo, what's it been like adjusting to working remotely?
Well, you know, the first thing I'd say is, you know, I think one of the things we did early on is we have a retail group, and we made a decision to keep stores open. And we made a decision to keep stores open while a lot of other people were shutting stores down. And you know, bikes were deemed essential because they're used as transportation in a lot of areas. And we said we were going to keep stores open, but we were going to do it really safe. And within 3 days of the pandemic, we had our retail group came out with a great process on how we were going to be able to keep people on their bikes and do it in a very safe manner. And I remember going out to our store in Madison and seeing people run the play. And then going to a Whole Foods, I was like, the Trek stores were 10 times safer than Whole Foods was. And I was just super proud of the group. And we were able to take all that information and share it with all of our retailers, to the Wheel and Sprockets of the world, to everybody else, and say, this is how you can run a safe business in the pandemic. And, you know, we've had an amazing effort put in by our retailers around the world. We have about 5,000 retailers around the world. And these have been frontline workers who have put in, you know, 80, 100-hour weeks keeping up with the bike boom, fixing bikes, assembling bikes, going through this. The people at Trek in the warehouses, manufacturing, you know, we've put in a big effort. So those have been the biggest parts of this. But, you know, a really big part has been dealing with the supply chain and trying to get parts, trying to get increases in production. That's been, you know, a huge focus here at the same time.
And can you touch on Trek's advocacy strategy and why that's so important to you? You guys do a lot for cycling in general, not just for the company. You also do a lot with social equity and sustainability at this point.
Yeah, I think I hear my mother is on the line, and it's my biggest fan club, one member. And, you know, one of the things I'm most proud about at Trek is not how many bikes we sell or what the profit is at the end of the year. It's how we run the company. And that comes from the values that my parents had. And that comes from the values that they passed on. And those values were passed on to their kids. Those values have been passed on to Trek. And one of the things we always try and do with Trek is we try and use the bike company to do great things. And in cycling, what that means is we get involved to create more and safer places to ride your bike, because we think that cycling can change the world. We think that there's a health crisis in America and a lot of other parts of the world, and we think people can get out on their bikes more often. We think there's an environmental crisis that's only going to get worse, and we think if people are riding their bikes, that helps the earth. And we think there's, you know, a big issue with congestion. And anybody who's on a bike is not in a car, and that helps people who have to be in their cars. So we put a big effort into advocacy throughout the United States, and there's more and more going on to create bike trails. And, you know, Amelia is on the line here, and one of the all-time great advocates was her father, Chris. And I don't mean just in Milwaukee. I mean around the United States. I would spend a lot of time with Chris in Washington, D.C., bending people's ears. And Chris made a huge difference in Milwaukee and around the country. And I think that's really good. But, you know, we do more. And, you know, one of my best stories is my mother was an early environmentalist, and we would save all of our papers, and we would save all of our cans, and we'd put them in the basement. And then once a month, we'd fill up the Vista Cruiser, which got like 3.5 miles to the gallon. And my mother would drive 20 miles to drop off the paper in the cans. And, you know, one of the things I'm really proud of at Trek right now are just our sustainability efforts. We're going to be coming out with a sustainability report, I think, near the end of May, early June. And it goes through, you know, what Trek has been doing on the sustainability side. And I had a conversation with Rory Kennedy about a year and a half ago, and she was telling me about this documentary that she had made about her uncle, President Kennedy, and NASA. And she went to do this documentary, and she found out upon interviewing everybody at NASA that NASA actually knows more about the Earth than anybody else. They're not just about space. They study the Earth. And so I watched the documentary and I was just blown away. And Rory told me, she goes, the people really in the know, they say we have 10 years. And I went back to Trek and I said, we're gonna do something about this. We're going to add this as one of our top objectives. And we're going to be a leader in climate change, and we're going to do it fast. And we've been making a lot of progress, and it's it's an area I'm really interested in, and we're doing some great work there. And the one other one I just want to talk about is just social equity. And after the George Floyd murder last year, a lot of companies did a lot of different things, and we thought about it. And then I have two huge whiteboards in my office, and I got a good team of people in, and I said, what could we really do? Besides sending out a press release or cutting a check, what could Trek really do? And the bike business is a white man's business. It's from a business standpoint and from a participation standpoint. And we had some 50 different ideas, and we whittled it down to six. But we're opening up stores in areas and cities where there are no bike shops. We are launching training programs. There's a shortage of mechanics and managers in bicycle retail. We're for people of color who haven't had chances, we're doing training. We've got six specific programs, including we spend a lot of money sponsoring kids mountain biking. There's a group called NYCA, and we have this amazing program out there, and we'll do over 250 scholarships a year to get underprivileged kids into an opportunity to get outside, to own their own bike, have their own equipment, and do that. And that is the tip of the iceberg of what Trek does. But, and this comes from my mother, it also comes from my father, just using the company to do things in the community.
And you consider Trek not just a bicycle company, but a hospitality company, and in some ways a hospitality company first. Can you talk about that?
You know, that goes back to when I started at Trek. I was a sales rep out on the road, and our hospitality score was zero. And, you know, I would go to customers, and I'd been there 2 weeks ago, and they still hadn't gotten their order. I'd taken care of their warranty in the process, the credits hadn't been processed. And it was a nightmare. And I said, man, if I ever get into a position of power around there, we're going to change that. And sure enough, Trek fell on some really hard times. And my father fired the managers, and he came in and he ran the business. And I was 23, and he brought me in to run customer service. And we got it rolling. And, you know, and that's one of the things I learned from him is you put the customer first. And we are all about hospitality. We just take care of people. Hospitality is part of our mission statement. We had this owner's manual, and I hate it. It's written by the lawyers, and it's terrible. And this is about 10 years ago, and they come in and they tell me, we're going to rewrite the owner's manual. And I say, thank God. And I go, would you just make it so it's for consumers and it's not for lawyers? And they said they were going to do that. And they came back and they told me all the reasons why it had to be for the lawyers. And I was fairly disgusted. And I said, well, give me this. I want the first two pages. And they said, okay. So I wrote a note and I said, dear customer, thank you for buying a Trek. Welcome to the Trek family. If you ever have any problem, please contact your Trek retailer and they'll take care of you. If they don't, call Trek at this number and they'll take care of you. And if they don't take care of you, here's my email and I will. And I can always tell you the start of the bike season, because that's when I start to get more and more emails. But we have a commitment throughout the organization that the customer's first, and we do whatever it takes to take care of the customer.
What gave you that idea? Because I've seen you answering those emails or even calling those people, and it's kind of funny. They're always shocked to hear from,
well, you know,
what do you fire off? Is it like 5 to 10 a week, maybe?
Oh, no. No, I'd say 5 to 10 a week in the slow, in the off season. And then when the in season comes in, it's maybe 5 to 10 a day. But, you know, I just get a kick out of getting an email from an irate customer. And I'm an email junkie, so I look at my emails regularly through the day. And so if one pops up, I just answer it right away. And they're like, I always like the ones that start out with, I know you'll never read this, but And so I always respond to those. And, you know, I always like calling up the customers on the phone. I get a little bit of a charge out of that. And I like taking care of the customers. It sets the tone throughout the entire organization. And we get the customer's problem solved.
How much more value do you think you're able to add as the president of the company that you're actually calling those customers and that you are an avid cyclist opposed to someone just in the C-suite, which I'm guessing what you're doing is rare compared to a lot of larger organizations, actually picking up the phone and responding to those emails?
Well, you know, it's something I love to do. I mean, I learn more from the customers than they learn from me, and it's a good chance for me to keep my hand on the pulse of what customers are actually thinking. And it also, you know, when a customer is reaching out to me, they have a problem. And we obviously didn't live up to what our commitment was. So out of that customer experience will come, you know, for me, it's getting people on the phone or sending emails, and it's getting to the root cause of the problem. And through one customer, you can solve a potential customer for 50,000 or 100,000 other customers. So I always view it as they're doing Trek a favor.
Mm-hmm. And one of your big goals is to make Trek a 100-year-old company, which would extend to 2076. Yeah. Why is that important, and how have you built a foundation to last?
There are always moments in your life that you never forget about. And I always, my father and I were having a conversation about the next generation of the business. And, you know, I was telling him he needed to do some better estate planning. And he really didn't want to take care of that. He's like, it's fine. And I'm like, well, what's the plan? And he goes, you'll figure it out. I go, that's the plan? He goes, that's the plan. And I go, okay. And I could put a plaque in my office where he and I, we weren't sitting down, we were standing up. And I can tell you where that happened. And there's another, I was in Japan, I was visiting Shimano, and I went out to lunch with Mr. Shimano, and he took me to the noodle restaurant. He loved the noodle restaurant because they had two SKUs, noodles and beer. Those were the only two things on the menu. And we get towards the end of the meal, and I asked him, I go, how long has the noodle house been here? And he said to me, he said, it's been under the same ownership for 600 years. I go, that's crazy. It is true. And on the way out, he introduced me to the owner. Who's standing next to the owner? His son. And you would just see that the noodle company could go on. But I think Trek is a special company, and I think I have an obligation. There's 4,000 families who depend on Trek. And then there's a lot of families. There's a lot of retailers. The Kegels depend on Trek. There's a lot of people who depend on Trek. And so I view my job as building a company to last, and not just last while I'm there, but last far beyond that. So that's always been my focus.
And do you want to talk about your leadership strategy and what you do with the senior level people at Trek to ensure that the company's in good hands? And it has gotten to such a level that everyone there, the top people, essentially have their own business unit. And I think you do a really good job on that.
Yeah. So, I mean, I've said this, you know, a guy who's really influenced me is Jim Collins. And I've read all his books, and I've been a Jim Collins fan for the last 20 years. And we were sitting around, I don't know, 2 years ago, and I'm sitting there with Mark Joslin, the HR guy. And we were talking about having a founder's mentality. We were going to have a conference of all of our leaders, bring them all into Madison. And who should we get to speak? And we had a great lineup. And I go, God, it'd be great to have Jim Collins. And I go, well, we're never going to get Jim Collins. And he goes, yeah, we are. And I'm like, have at it, Tiger. And Jim Collins came to Trek, and he spoke in Madison, and it was a game changer for me. And, you know, it's one thing to read his books. It's another thing to sit in the audience and hear the man. But one of his big things is, you know, level five leadership. All great companies have exceptional leaders. And it's not just the guy at the top or the woman at the top. It's the units that make up the company. And one of the things we've effectively done is we used to look at Trek as one big blob. And today we look at Trek as 420 individual business units. And, you know, I have two things that I view as my responsibility. One is I want to create level five leaders. And the second one is I want to have great plans for their sparkling minibus. And, you know, we call each one of those units a sparkling minibus, a small pocket of greatness. And, you know, Trek's success is not going to be Trek. It's going to be 425 leaders getting the job done day in and day out and making sure it's my responsibility to make sure they have a great plan. And it's my responsibility to coach them up to being level five leaders. And if at Trek, all we accomplish is making sure all of our leaders are level five leaders and every one of our businesses is a small pocket of greatness, a sparkling minibus, we're done. That's all that needs to happen. And so my focus in the business is on those two things.
Hey everyone, it's your host Richie Burke. Thanks again for tuning in today. I wanted to let you know, if you are a CMO, if you're a marketing manager, if you're a business owner and you're looking to grow your business in 2021 online through digital marketing, through podcasting, through video, let us know. Head to ggmm.io or shoot me an email, richie@ggmm.io. We've had the opportunity to work with a lot of great clients in 2021 already, even though the year's just getting started. Clients like Johnson Controls, Marquette University, MSOE, Johnson Financial, Trek, First Federal Bank, and a number of other mid-sized businesses, as well as global brands. And if you're interested in seeing how we can help you, again, don't hesitate to reach out to myself, richie@ggmm.io, or just head to our website, ggmm.io, and fill out the form on there. Thanks again for tuning in and supporting the Go-Getters podcast. Let's get back to the show.
And can you touch on how you've created a culture at Trek that's enabled you to recruit top talent in the world to Waterloo, Wisconsin?
Well, you know, that's a great question, but I think that goes back to my dad. It's the culture. He really created the culture. And this is interesting. This goes back to who he was as a person. Is he cared more about other people than he cared about himself. And his goal in business wasn't to make the most amount of money. His goal in business was to run a great business and share that success with as many people as he did. And, you know, he had an ESOP. And he had an employee stock ownership program back in the 70s. And, you know, that employee ownership program exists today at Trek. 25% of Trek is owned by the employees. And he had profit sharing in 401ks. And that was long before, you know, people were profit sharing. And, you know, he really believed in taking care of employees. And we do a lot of things for our employees that nobody ever hears about. And I'll never forget one. Trek was losing money one year. And we had a sales rep out in California, and his wife had cancer, and she was going to die. And she had been accepted into this experimental program, but it cost $200,000. And I told the big guy about that, and he goes, done. It wasn't, I'll think about it and I'll get back to you tomorrow. It was just, yeah, we'll do that. Done. And that's the way my parents both thought. And that's the way Trek's run. But we do that. And I would say that's culture 1.0. What makes Trek special? Culture 2.0 is we had this guy, Mark Joslin, who joined Trek as the HR dude, I don't know, 15 years ago, maybe a little bit more. And he said, we're going to create an awesome bus here. And so we do a lot of amazing things at Trek. The best mountain bike trails in the world are not in Colorado or in British Columbia. They're in Waterloo, Wisconsin. We bought a couple hundred acres across the street, and the most amazing trails are at Trek. If you want to go to the best cafe, the best chef in the United States, go to Trek. We got the squirrel. He's holding court there at the Trek Cafe. And I mean, it's just the hospitality at the Trek Cafe is off the charts. It's amazing. But we do all these things. And one of the things we really focus on is how can we make Trek a great place to work? And we belong to a group called Great Places to Work. And we measure Trek every year. We have a number. And every year we chart that number on how good is Trek as a place to work. And every year we have plans to improve that.
Yeah, and you and everyone over at Trek has done a great job building an amazing company. But what are some of the biggest mistakes that you've made in your career and lessons learned from that?
How much time do we have?
20-ish minutes, but
okay.
Questions in the chat box that I think are not just people saying that you're better looking than me. I think there was only one.
Well, let me lay down on the couch for a minute. I really believe that the biggest mistakes I've made have been people mistakes, where I have let people stay in a job for too long and they were not doing the job that I needed to be done, and they were not living by the values of the company, and I tolerated it. And that cost the company a lot in financial terms. It cost the company in cultural terms, and it really held us back. And the most important thing you need to do as a leader is you need to have the best team on the field. And that is a lesson that I've learned the hard way. I've paid for that lesson. And I have, I give all the people that I work with directly, I give a Christmas gift to. And each year I give them a different Christmas gift. And so it always takes me a while to come up with, well, what am I going to give them this year? And this year I gave them a picture of us, our leadership team. And I had a plaque put on it, best team on the field. That was it. Best team on the field, 2020. Done. And then on the back of it, I did a handwritten note to each one of them telling them how much they meant to Trek and how much they meant to me and what they've done. And I'm just so proud of the group that's at Trek. And it, it just means a lot to me, but it's all about people. And if you take a look at my biggest mistakes, they've come down to people.
And I want to go back to your dad, the big guy, my grandpa, Dick Burke, who founded Trek, passed away in 2008. You wrote a book about his life, legacy, your relationship with him. It's called One Great Thing. Can you talk about why you wrote the book and the top lessons that you learned from him? And then we'll move on to questions.
I almost cry when I think about him. And he meant a lot to me. And I just go back, and he was an amazing guy. And he died too early. And I learned so much from him. And I wanted my kids to understand the lessons of my father's life. And he gave an amazing speech at his 70th birthday. And he asked me that night, he said, I have a number of remarks I'd like to make this evening. And I said, well, okay, that's great, Dad. He goes, when should I give my remarks? And the only people who are there is the family. I'm like, well, Dad, you can do that whenever you want. And about 20 minutes later, he's like, I really want to know when I can give my remarks. And I'm like, it's not a sales meeting. You can, why don't we do it after dinner and before dessert? He goes, okay, that would be fine. So we get to after dinner and before dessert, and he stands up, and out of his sport coat, he pulls out the yellow legal pad. And my father took copious notes for 50 years. And he had these binders where he kept all the notes, and they were all on yellow legal pads. And he had 6 pages, and he took the family through his whole life. And at the end, he said, I have one last great thing to do in my life. He goes, I don't know what it is, but I have one last great thing. And I don't know, maybe 6 months later, he had a heart valve put in, and it was infected. And he had an 84-day battle in the hospital, and he didn't make it. But in those 84 days, the one last great thing he did was the way he died and the love that he passed on. And I wanted my kids to understand the lesson of his life. So after he gave that speech about his 70th birthday, I was flying to Europe. And it was such an amazing speech. I go, I'm going to type out all the notes, just what I remembered. And I kept it. And then I said, well, I'm gonna write a short little book for my two kids. And so I wrote the book, and my assistant, she read it, and she goes, this is really good. You should turn it into a book. And I had a couple other people read it. And so we turned it into a book, and I thought it was pretty good. So if anybody wants that book, Rotary will give you my email and send me a note, and I'll send you a copy of that book. Did you want to know, do we have time for his lessons?
Yeah, fire away.
I just
if you got anything off your head.
I just a couple off my head. You know, that whole thing I already talked about, it was the customer comes first. He was great about, he knew the customer made the decisions, and he was great about that. I think one of his biggest lessons was he played the infinite game. And there's a book out now by Simon Sinek called The Infinite Game. If you read the first 2 pages, that's the story of Trek. And that's what my father did. He wasn't in it for the quarterly results or the yearly financial statement. He was in it for the infinite game, to build a great company. And he left that lesson. And you know, the other lesson he left, and we've really adopted it at Trek, is there's a red barn at Trek where the company started. And it, to be honest with you, it's not a very good-looking barn. And the marketing department once wanted to shoot an ad with my father in it, and so they took him to a good-looking barn. And he said, I'm not going to do it. He was an authentic guy. He goes, not doing it. And so I don't think they did it. But his whole thing was, this was a guy who had the nickname the big guy, and he was 5'8". And the reason he got that name, and I gave it to him, is he was a big personality. But more importantly than that is he thought big. And when Trek was a small company, he always saw something much bigger. And when he took a look at Milwaukee, his foundation, you know, he was named Philanthropist of the Year in Milwaukee 10 years after he died. And it's because he always could see bigger things. And, you know, he's left that lesson behind at Trek. And I think we've done a pretty good job of living up to that. So those are a few of the things that I think are good lessons for everyone.
Absolutely. Let's go to questions. And Mary or Michelle, can you type in? I forget what time we have to go to, if it's 55 or what. So JB, we'll just go kind of rapid fire answers on these. Teresa Regan, what percentage of your business is domestic and what are your biggest markets globally?
We're going rapid fire. What percentage of the business is domestic? Probably 35%. Biggest markets overseas? Germany, Austria, Switzerland, that's one business unit for Trek. That's big. The Netherlands is a big business unit for Trek. We do well in Australia. Those are some big ones.
Sounds good. And we have till 12:58. So if people have more questions, feel free to drop them in. Michael McNeil, with the explosion of stationary bike market like Peloton, Nordic getting into it, do you see them as a competitor or an enabler / promoter for the sport?
Promoter. I think, that if you would have asked me that a year and a half, 2 years ago, I wouldn't have been able to answer the question. Today, I would say promoter. People who are riding Pelotons are, they get the joy of a bike inside in Milwaukee when it's 10 below. And I think they really want to get outside when the time is right. I think it's gotten a lot of people back into cycling.
Paula Pennybaker, do you have anything to help drivers understand the need to respect cyclists as we're encouraged to respect motorcyclists? Or, yeah, any way for drivers to respect cyclists on the road more?
You know, one of my favorite products at Trek is, I was in San Diego maybe 7 or 8 years ago, and I saw a road cyclist in the middle of the day had a light on the back of his bike. The problem was you couldn't see it. And I said to myself, God, that would be a great idea if you could see his blinking light, because people just thought about lights for at night. And so we developed a product called the Flare R, and it's this product that sits on the back of your bike that from a mile and a half away, you can see this amazing light. And I was with my wife driving the other day, and we saw a car a mile and a half away, and we saw this, and she said, you know, I was driving in the car the other day, and I was turning the radio, and my head popped up, and I could see a cyclist 500 yards away because he had that light. And I'm not trying to be a salesperson today, but if you're cycling, if you want to be visible to car drivers, go over to Wheel and Sprocket and buy a set of lights. It makes a massive difference.
All right. Captain Jamie Reeve, I'll still answer your question. With your customer service focus, do you also rally them to help with innovation and ideation?
Oh, not as much as we should. We're actually looking to put in a new system that will do a much better job of capturing things. One of the benefits of the pandemic has been Microsoft Teams, and I would say that our listening skills in the past 12 months have multiplied 5x. I run an executive strategy meeting every Monday morning at 9 o'clock that goes for 3 or 4 hours. We start out every one of those meetings with two customers. And when you get your eight top executives in a room with two customers with their five pieces of advice for Trek, amazing things happen. So we do a really good job of listening. When you take a look at how well do we listen to customer service people, we have a big area of opportunity and improvement there.
Yeah. Jeff Martinka, not a question, just says, thanks for being a great Wisconsin employer and for the many gifts the family's Burke Foundation has offered to its home state.
Thank you.
Thank you to Kathy Burke on the call, too. She does a lot with the foundation. I think she's on with Lainey. Tom Sattler.
All of my sisters do, and I don't.
Tom Sattler, have you been able to compete as a manufacturer against global competition? How have you been able to compete as a manufacturer against global competition?
Okay, that's a big question. We're in a global marketplace, and whether people like it or not. And we get a lot of product from Asia. We also import product from Europe. We have a large factory in Germany that makes bikes for the European market. It also makes e-bikes. And we also build high-end bikes, expensive bikes in Wisconsin. But the entire supply chain for the bicycle business is in Asia. All the parts come from Asia. There aren't tire manufacturers, crank makers, cassette makers, chain makers in the United States. Zero. So if you go to the automotive business, there's a supply base. In the bicycle business, there really isn't. And, you know, we were hit hard by the Trump tariffs. And one of my frustrations with the government is, you know, if you wanted to have a proactive trade policy for bicycle manufacturing in the United States, you could do that, but nobody has the vision and nobody has the desire to sit down and actually deal with a real problem that could be solved. They do it in Europe, and in the United States, nobody asks. It's just sits there.
Yeah. All right. We got 3 minutes and about four questions. So we'll move quick. Karen Hung, what message would you give to peer CEOs and leaders about the future and how to leverage commerce to influence culture for good?
Well,
not really a rapid fire question.
It's not, but you know, I would say this is I would read about companies who do it well and I would adopt those best practices. It's all out there. There are amazing companies, whether it's Trek, whether it's Patagonia. There's a lot of companies who do amazing things, and you can learn from those companies.
Yeah.
You don't need to rewrite that chapter.
Yeah. Can you comment on the e-bike boom?
It's a big boom that is in the second inning. And if you haven't ridden an e-bike, go ride an e-bike. It will change your life. There are two things in the last 15 years that have put a massive smile on people's faces, an iPhone and an e-bike. That's it. There's no zero is the correct answer to the question of how many people have been disappointed buying an e-bike. Zero. Okay.
Jenny says, I appreciate your efforts to get more people of color in the bike business from sales and management to maintenance. What are you doing to get more women in the industry?
Oh, you know, we have a great group of women at Trek in some really powerful positions. And our hiring continues to increase in that area. One of the areas that we're hiring in certain cities is where we have retail stores. We have this at Trek corporately, is we have a great female workforce. I mean, it's off the charts, and you need that base at entry-level positions to get the knowledge to work up in the organizations. One of the great things about Trek is we promote from within. And, you know, the woman who's in charge of design at Trek is Beth Silke for retail design. She's off the charts. Lori Cook's in charge of global customer service. Amazing. Maureen Muldoon, legend at Trek. She's been there for over 30 years. And so is Lori. Maureen's in charge of rest of the world sales. Our general counsel at Trek, Jen Nager, I'm on the phone with her to talk about a problem in 30 minutes. We do a really good job in that area, and we're continuing to do so.
Hey, everyone. Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Go-Getters Podcast, brought to you by Go Get It Marketing and Media, ggmm.io, and our friends over at On Milwaukee. And thank you to the Milwaukee Rotary Club for putting on this event. It was a good time. My dad and I enjoyed it. I've been a member of that organization for, man, probably 6 or 7 years now, and it has been a a very good way to make connections, get involved in the community, make friends. I've also gotten a bunch of clients from that. It's been good for just life in general, businesses, socially, community involvement. So if you are a professional in the Milwaukee area and are interested, I recommend checking it out. You can just Google Milwaukee Rotary. I'm sure they have a form you can fill out. And yeah, it's a good spot. So thanks again for tuning in. And if you got any value out of this episode, I don't know how you wouldn't have, please write a review. Please share the content. Please subscribe to the show. That really helps us grow it. We're almost at 200,000 downloads since 2019. And I want to get there fast. So selfishly, if you write a review and subscribe, I would really appreciate it. Thanks again.